Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 6, 2015. Upper Nile and Unity State lawmakers accuse SPLA General, who is a former militia leader, of carrying out last week's deadly attack.
It is worth underscoring that the presence of Johnson Oloyin forces in their current deployment is a major threat to peace, stability, peaceful coexistence of the people of Great Upper Nile.
And Awil officials say they have run out of basic food commodities.
We don't have basic consumer goods, like flour and everything. If the government wants to fix this, they need to make more dollars available to us and repair the roads linking Uganda and South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Lawmakers from 8 counties in Upper Nile and Unity States are accusing a former militia leader who is now a general in the SPLA of masterminding clashes that led to the deaths of at least 20 people last week. The Padang Community Coalition made the accusation today at a press conference in Juba. Padang community representatives told reporters attending the news conference that Major General Johnson Oloyin masterminded last week's attack for tribal reasons. Lawmakers, chiefs, youth, women and religious leaders from the Padang community all attended today's press conference. Chairperson of the Padang community, Ramadan Chan, says militia forces suspected of being allies of Oloyin last Wednesday crossed from the western bank of the Nile to the east of Akoka County in Upper Nile State and launched attacks on innocent civilians. 18 people, mostly youth, were killed. Houses were burned and property was looted. Chan says Oloyin's deputy in command of the militia forces, identified as Major General James Bwogo, was also killed during the clashes.
It is worth underscoring that the presence of Johnson Oloyin forces in their current deployment is a major threat to peace, stability, peaceful coexistence of the people of Great Upper Nile. His antagonistic activities jeopardize the effort of mobilizing communities toward peace and national healing.
Chan says last week's incident was not the first of its kind. Oloyin's other disruptive activities targeting the people of Padang community in the 8 counties has been ongoing since he switched loyalties from rebel forces to the government. Oloyin was a former militia leader against President Salva Kiir's administration up until 2013 when he began engaging in peace talks with the government. It is believed he switched sides during the outbreak of the crisis between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in late 2013. According to Sudan Tribune and Radio Tamazuj, Oloyin later fought against Machar's forces and inflicted heavy casualties, which displaced many rebel forces in key towns of Upper Nile State. Chan says Oloyin's forces failed to protect unarmed civilians.
Forces of Major General Johnson Oloyin have deviated from their duty as National Army and have abandoned their responsibility of protecting South Sudanese citizens and their property, and have turned against Padang Jian community in pursuit of narrow tribal ambition similar to that of Riek Machar and his rebels.
James Touch, a lawmaker in South Sudan, lower house of the Council of State, says the government is partially to blame for last week's deadly attack and other crimes committed by Oloyin's forces. He says upon wooing Oloyin back to the government's side, officials fail to understand Oloyin's agenda and says the government is failing to minimize insecurity threats in Upper Nile State. He says Oloyin and his forces have been
armed him to the teeth, having heavy weapons to go and bring back his lands that were taken by the Dinka. To this understanding, I think that it was an oversight from our side as a government. We would have not trusted him to that level.
Chan says both state and national government officials need to step up and take action against Oloyin.
We appeal to the President of the Republic of South Sudan and the Commander-in-Chief of the SPLA to urgently address the issue of Johnson Oloyin and his forces before it degenerates into ethnic conflicts between Padang, Jing, and Chola communities.
The United Nations Children's Education Fund, or UNICEF, last month accused Oloing of abducting about 100 children in Upper Nile State to be forcefully recruited into his forces. Waki Simon Wudu prepared this report in Juba. Meanwhile, a senior member of the SPLM in opposition says the situation in Upper Nile is turning to an ethnic conflict. SPLM in opposition shadow governor for Fashoda, Tijuok Agwet, says government-backed militia are attacking civilians in eastern part of Upper Nile State.
John Solonon is an ally of the government, of the Juba government regime. And it has been fighting all this war this time against the opposition, SPLM-IO. But over recent, when they saw that John Solonon has achieved the mission that they wanted him to do, to fight the Nuer and to shake all the Nuer people and defeat the SPLM-IO, according to them, they started now to remove him from the eastern bank of the Nile because he has the areas of Nigir.
When you are saying they decided to remove him, who are you referring to here? When you say they, who are you referring to?
I'm referring to the Dinka Padang and the government himself, the Dinka government, which is behind them, because this is done by very close elements in the government. Dinka Padang of Akoka, Malut, and Bailiet, and Rang people. They have gathered themselves, and they went to clear all the areas of the Chola in the eastern bank of the Nile. You start from a place called Nigir, and Abanim, and Lul, and all these areas. These are the areas in the eastern bank of the Nile, north of Malakal town, because Malakal town is in the eastern bank of the Nile. And all these areas are the areas in the Fashoda state. And this is where now they came and fought these people, pushing them back to the place where they are now today. They are in a place called Nyingaro in Boot, and they have cleared all these areas, taking pushing the Shuluk out of this.
What is the situation on the ground as we talk now?
And the situation is really too bad, and it is unfortunate that many civilians also have been affected by this war. Because from the eastern bank, they started to bombard and shell the Chola civilian, which are in the other side, the western side of the Nile.
This sounds a little bit like an ethnic fighting. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, this is exactly an ethnic fighting, but it is government-engineered war. This is a government-engineered war because even when this war started, there are some key leaders from the government who came and landed in Paloch, and they are the one who engineered this thing with their militias, because all these militias are related to the government and are fully supported by the government. Because even when they fought in the first day in the morning, they were defeated and chased toward the Akoka area, which is the Dinka, the neighboring Dinka people who are claiming this area. But when they came back with the very big machineries of the government themselves to attack back. That's where now they captured all these areas that is under them today.
Where is Johnson Oloing?
Oloing is now western bank of the Nile with his forces, because his forces are in both sides. They are in the western and the eastern bank, those all these Chola areas.
So you're telling me he's in a western bank of the Nile. Which area exactly is he?
I cannot tell now, but what I know some 2 days ago, when they had a funeral, this is where I can say that they have been in Warijog, because the man who was killed, his name is James Bogo, is a son of a village called Warijog. That is, Warijog is the western bank of the Nile.
That is Tijuok Agwet, shadow governor of Fashoda area in Upper Nile State. He was speaking with me from Manyo County in Upper Nile this past hour. Officials in Awil say the city has run out of staple commodities such as flour, sugar, sorghum. They are blaming food shortages on bad roads to closed borders and high dollar exchange rate that has driven up the cost of imported goods. Awil Deputy Mayor Wol Mathok Ding Wol blames the lack of basic food items on the fact that South Sudan imports most consumer products, including food. Many consumer products and food are imported from Uganda, South Sudan's biggest trading partner. Sudan is also an important source for many of the products imported to northern Bahr al-Ghazal. Wall says close border crossing, high road taxes, security risks and expenses incurred by traders are contributing to the shortages in the state.
As there are elections currently happening in Sudan, the Sudanese government gave orders that all routes entering South Sudan be closed. As we speak, there are groups from the Miseria tribe deployed along the border between northern and western Bahr al-Ghazal states and Sudan. This may be the main reason for the shortage of goods on the market.
Wall believes another problem is that traders will sometimes stockpile goods when they become scarce. They hold on to the goods until prices go up so that they can reap huge profits during hard times. He also says poor roads between Juba and Awil have contributed to the current crisis. Fresh produce and other consumer goods being brought from Uganda never even make it to Awil. Kwel Akok Nye is a local trader in Awil town. He says all of his stock is gone. He points the finger to the shortage of foods good at high dollar exchange.
All the traders stopped bringing in goods from Uganda because of the strong dollar, and this has affected what is available to consumers. Traders don't want to buy dollars because the exchange rates go up daily. So we don't have basic consumer goods, like flour and everything. If the government wants to fix this, they need to make more dollars available to us and repair the roads linking Uganda and South Sudan.
The US dollar exchange rate has increased from just over 3 South Sudanese pounds to a dollar to 7.6 pounds to a dollar. A 50-kilogram bag of maize flour that used to cost 150 South Sudanese pounds now cost 450 South Sudanese pounds. Similarly, 50 kilos of sugar have gone from 220 pounds to 470 pounds. More alarmingly, however, basic foodstuff like sugar, maize flour, sorghum, beans are completely missing from the shelves. Awil town officials say they are working to restore the supply of missing staple foods. They hope the goods will be available again in the next few days. Abraham Agot prepared this report from Awil town. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese students living in Uganda say there is no point to voting in this month's general election and they want help to boycott the vote. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should presidential terms be limited?
In a democratic setup, presidential terms should be limited so that at least other people should also come and exercise power, maybe do it better than the previous leaders.
I think you cannot be a president for so long. No, will not. But if you are a president for almost like limited years, like 4 years or 5 years, somebody will come and contest you. If your work is good, you can continue with the leadership.
To my point of view, I think, yes, it should be limited, maybe 2 terms. Now, for example, I can use my country in Sudan or in Africa. There is no complete democracy. When the government stays for long, they tend to forget the purpose of why they're in power.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese students studying in Uganda held a meeting over the weekend to voice their objection to Sudan's upcoming elections. 71-year-old President Omar al-Bashir is running for a 4th term in office. The students, who are mostly from southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states, insist the election will not be inclusive, and they accuse the National Congress Party of instigating continued attacks in Darfur, Blue Nile and southern Kordofan. Bonifacio Taban has more for VOA from Kampala.
As fighting continues between the Sudan People Liberation Army North and Sudanese Army Force in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan, Sudanese university students in Kampala organized a meeting to formally reject the April 13 election. And the students are asking for assistance from the international community to help them boycott the votes. 10 of 1,000 of Sudanese civilians have fled to Uganda via South Sudan since 2009 because of the heavy aerial bombardment from the Sudanese army on community in Blue Niles and southern Kordofan. The army said they are fighting the SPLA North and other insurgents in those communities, but many civilians have died in the attacks. Carlo S. Kuma is a Sudanese student studying political science at St. Lawrence University in Kampala. He said the situation in both regions is completely out of control. Kuma blamed the Bashir administration for the unrest and massive displacement of civilians.
We do not want one part of the country to be stable and the other one not to be stable. Once stability has to come, it has to come for the whole country. It has to be comprehensive. But we know well that once he takes over the seat, these regions will continue suffering. If he takes over the seat, well, these regions are going to suffer. He will continue displacing people internally and people will continue suffering.
The Sudanese student who gathered in Kampala on Saturday said they do not see a peaceful compromise ever being reached between the warring parties in Sudan. Kuma believes the only solution for the Sudanese people is regime change.
The fact that I'm out now of Sudan, I'm studying abroad, I still have hope and vision that one day there will be peace in Sudan, but it is only after this regime is out of Sudan. So I hope that I will go back to my country once this regime is out. And if it's not out, I still have hope that I should go back and participate in trying to bring peace in Sudan.
In his campaign message last week, President Omar al-Bashir accused the SPLA North of failing to take part in the national dialogue he has been calling for in recent months to help bring about constitutional reform. But rebel group said the president has no intention of reforming the government or the constitution. Sudanese student Mohamed Zain at Kampala University is urging President Bashir to work for the people's interests rather than allow rampant killing by the Sudanese army in Darfur, southern Kordofan, and the Blue Nile state.
Omar Bashir act like a president. Why do you bombard your citizens? Solve the problem and see. But you don't solve the problems and you kill the population.
Lino Lako Angalo, a student at Kampala International University, described the situation in his native southern Kordofan state as fragile, forcing thousands of people to flee their home. He said he did not want to leave his country, but the ongoing violence forced him to do so.
For sure, it is the war has forced us to come this side. If it wasn't the war, we could have been at home, we could have been studying there where we are, but it is the war has forced us to come this side.
A student like Atunia Joseph at Kabene University vowed that should the war continue in his home region's southern Kordofan, youths like him will take up arms against President Bashir and his army.
We are trying to respond to the military. We train ourselves and then we go ahead. It is our Sudan. It is our land that we've been in a problem. We don't want to die in. The party was just there. It took power by force. And if it wants us to be removed by force, we are ready for that.
Both Blue Nile and Southern Kordofan were granted separate consultation in the Comprehensive Peace Agreement signed in 2005. That agreement paved the way for the 2011 referendum, which led to an independent South Sudan. When South Sudan gained its independence, the SPLA North in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile refused to be integrated into the Sudanese army force. Mr. Bashir's government has been battling the SPLA North in both regions since 2011. Sudanese officials have accused their former allies in the SPLA of providing support to troops in the South, an accusation the SPLA has repeatedly denied. For BOA News, I'm Boniface Taban in Kampala.
Now we move to Kenya. Kenyan officials say one of the Al-Shabaab terrorists who massacred 148 people at Garissa University College was the son of a Kenyan government official. The Interior Ministry say Abdulrahim Abdullahi was among four attackers killed last Thursday during the attack. The news came as Kenyans dedicated Easter Sunday services to the massacred victims, and Pope Francis prayed for Christians killed by the Islamic gunmen. Ngara Kariuki, a reporter with the Kenyan Daily Nation newspaper, tells VOA's James Batty that law school classmates of Abdullahi describe him as intelligent, well-dressed, and someone who always carried a lot of money.
The latest is that we've been able to establish the identity of one of the Garissa terrorists. He's 24 years old and his name is Mohammed Abdirahim Abdullahi. We know that his father was actually a chief of one of the villages there. He's called Bula Jamhuri. We also managed to talk to some of the students who are his classmates in law school, and they actually described him as a guy who was very intelligent. He used to be very opinionated in debate. He was a sharp dresser, and one thing that stood out was his classmates would say that he used to have a lot of money or spend a lot of money, and it would look like he was well off or came from a well-to-do family. And so it was rather surprising to find that even someone who is intelligent, a law student, could be radicalized and used as one of the instruments in terror. And that has sparked a whole debate here in Kenya about now, or what is it that leads people to do such acts.
What can you tell us? That there is a report that his father had reported or had told Kenyan security that his son had disappeared from home.
I'm not sure about that report, because according to some of the facts that we established and the ones we are reporting tomorrow, there is no record of the father reporting. But according from information we have from the Ministry of Interior Security, we are told that there's a sister to one of the chiefs from the same area who is missing. And so they are trying to find a connection between the two, but it is not yet linked, so we cannot really confirm whether or not there's a connection.
If all this information is true, doesn't this confirm or add to these allegations that the Kenyan government had been kind of slow to act?
Yeah, actually, there has been a lot of allegations about the slow response from the government. And as late as Sunday, the prevailing narrative has been that people commenting on security experts commenting on the slow response of the government. And yes, if the father did report that the son was missing to security agents, and I'm not sure if he reported to the extent of saying maybe he suspected he could be involved in any terrorism act. But we also know that some of these universities had received notices or warnings that there's going to be an attack. And even then, there was no response by the government to either try to secure some of these institutions or act on that information. After the attack began, there was also the accusations or the response taken by the government was rather slow, because we are told that the first responders came to the school as late as 11 hours after the attack began.
So how did Kenyans celebrate Easter Sunday?
The mood was rather sad. Personally, I was at the Chiromo mortuary where families were coming to see if they can identify the bodies of their loved ones. And there was a general sense of frustration because people did not know whether the students who are missing are dead or they're in the list of the injured students, or they survived but they're not reachable via the phone.
That's Ngari Kariuki, a reporter with the Kenyan Daily Nation newspaper, speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Kenyan warplanes have attacked targets in neighboring Somalia days after gunmen from Somali militant group Al-Shabaab killed 148 people at the Kenyan university. The Kenya Defense Forces say the airstrikes targeted two Al-Shabaab camps in the Gedo region of southern Somalia. Kenya Defense Forces spokesman David Obanyo said today that the two camps were destroyed, though he did not give a death toll. Pakistan's defense minister says Saudi Arabia has asked Pakistan to provide ground troops, planes and warships to help a coalition battling Iran-backed rebels in Yemen. Khawaja Muhammad Asif spoke during parliament debate on whether to join the Saudi-led effort against the Yemen rebels that began last month with airstrikes in support of internationally-backed President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi. The president fled the country last month and went to Riyadh. And finally, U.S. President Barack Obama says the framework agreement to curb Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief is, in his words, the best bet by far to keep Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. In a New York Times interview posted yesterday, Mr. Obama said simply continuing sanctions would leave the world with less insight into Iran's nuclear program, and that military strikes would be a temporary setback that would almost certainly prompt them to make a rush toward a bomb. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Despite a decrease in deadly attacks in Cameroon, officials there say suspected Boko Haram fighters have been seizing food and livestock from farmers and cattle keepers along the country's northern border with Nigeria for the past few weeks. As Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde, most farmers are now relocating to safer areas far from the border.
The governor of Far North Cameroon, Midiyawa Bakari, says the armed insurgents carry out raids in groups of 5 to 10, seizing cattle, food and money from residents along Cameroon's border with Nigeria's Borno State.
La frontière est longue pour eux. Et cette question, nous le mettons sur le compte.
He says Cameroon's very long and porous border with Nigeria makes it possible for the insurgents to attack crop farmers, cattle ranchers and small businesses and quickly make a getaway.
Les bœufs se sont retrouvés en divagation. Personne ne pouvait aller là-bas et ça fait des milliards.
Sally Daru, a member of the National Assembly from Northern Cameroon, tells VOA some of the farmers who refuse to cooperate with the assailants have been killed. But the governor says the inability of Boko Haram to organize a major attack on Cameroon for more than 2 months now is an indication they are finding it very difficult to regroup themselves in Nigeria due to the offensives carried out by the new regional military force with troops from Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria. He says he is very sure Boko Haram will be terminated soon and that today everyone can see that the end of the terrorist group is near. The last major attack by Boko Haram on Cameroonian territory was on January 10, 2015 at Fotokol, when about 300 assailants killed 500 people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
And that report by Kinzeka brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Let Me Go by Talis.
Hey, what's up, listeners? This is Talis Kwai. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Don't stop your dial. We keep going, not stopping.
We have been listening to Taliz with the song Let Me Go. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We are glad you could be with us. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.